BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. I trust you'll find our topic and discussion be rather stimulating and informative. You know, many have looked upon the United States as being a superpower that cannot fall, and yet we see the morals and values upon which our nation was founded to be eroding right from underneath us. We talk about the violence in our society and why are we killing one another when all we have to do is look back and see how we have systematically removed thou shalt not kill from our classrooms. We've removed God from the classrooms and from the public square. Many of the lawsuits generated today against any recognition or acknowledgement of God are stemming from the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. Did you know that this organization was started by one who declared his desire for socialism, for the abolishing of the state, with communism as the goal? Are you familiar with communistic goals? Do you know how important your children are, this generation, to fulfill these goals? And when you look at the goals and you look at what's happening in the United States, it's like a checklist that's being marked off and fulfilled with each passing day. Joining us in discussion today, we welcome back William Federer. Bill is a historian, he's a speaker, he's an author, he's president of Amerisearch Incorporated, that's a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. He has authored many books, including America's God and Country, Encyclopedia of Quotations, The Original 13, History of Religion, America's First 13 States, Who is a King in America?, Miracles in American History, and more. He is the speaker on the American Minute Daily Broadcast. Bill, good to have you back with us on Crosstalk.
Jim, great to be with you.
Bill, we're going to delve right into it because we've got a lot to talk about today. We know that there's been this systematic removal of God from the public square, from Bibles and prayer in the classrooms. But if you would just briefly review for us what has happened with this matter of prayer in the schools. Prayer was once mandatory, wasn't it?
Well, it was. And one of the things I bring out in an overview of history is the most common form of government is a king. Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar. As the centuries go on, the kingdoms get bigger till the King of England had the biggest. The sun never set on the British Empire. America's founders flipped it and made the people the king. It's called a republic. Now, where the people are the king, they need to be educated and they need to have morals and they're accountable to God. And I go through, this was what's called the Hebrew Republic, is what they had in Israel for 400 years before they got King Saul. But America's founders, especially in colonial New England, looked back to that as the model. So they set up our government in America where the people are in charge, but the people need to be educated and moral. And so they set up schools to teach the people, right, mm-hmm. educated and moral. Even John Adams, when he wrote the Constitution for Massachusetts, he put in there that the state would fund the public teaching of Protestant Christianity. And you think, why would John Adams be so insistent? Well, he realized that if it's no longer going to be a top-down form of government where you have a king who rules through fear, it is going to have to be a bottom-up form of government where the people have self-control and morals and virtue. And so the people need to be taught. And so the education system in America was originally for Protestant Christianity. That's the way it was for about 150 years. In the early 1800s, you had Catholic students, right? Catholic immigration, Irish potato famine, and so forth. And the Catholic parochial system was set up. And so you basically had two kinds of public schools. The public school was Protestant. The parochial school was Catholic. Mm-hmm. And then that went on for about another 100 years until the early 1900s. And you saw some cases where there was a nun teaching in the public school dressed in her nun outfit, and some Protestants brought lawsuit. They said, if she does a really good job, the students will want to be like her, and they may be tempted to want to become Catholic, and we don't want that. So there was a big lawsuit over whether the nuns could wear their habits, their dress in the public schools. And it's almost like these two forces, Protestant Catholic, they were beating each other up, and they decided, and this was the Everson case, and then later the 1962 case where they took prayer out of schools and then Bible reading out of schools. They said, well, we don't want Christianity taught from a particular denomination's viewpoint, so let's just get it out of the schools altogether.
Hmm.
They didn't have a clue what would take its place.
Yeah.
At the time, 98% of the country was Christian, about 25% Catholic, and then all the rest were different denominations of Protestants, Baptists being the largest, followed by Presbyterians and Methodists and Lutherans, and then down the list. And but the whole country was Christian. There's a website. It's called the CIA.gov. That's right. It's the CIA's website. On there, they have a World Fact Book. And you can click on it, and it lists every nation in the world and every conceivable fact about that nation. Gross national product, HIV death or infant mortality rate, I mean, and religion. And you look up China, and it's a large percent Buddhist. You look up Pakistan, and it's 90% Muslim. You look up Saudi Arabia, and it's 100% Muslim. That's because it's the death penalty to be anything other than Muslim. You look up India, and it has a large percent Hindu, and you click through these countries. Well, then you click on the United States. I've been keeping track of these numbers for 30 years. When I first started looking at it, the CIA.gov World Factbook listed the United States as 98% Christian. Now, that's down a little bit from the founding era, where you literally have historians saying it was you know, 98 to 99% Protestant Christian at the time of the founding, 1% Catholic. Catholics were only allowed in three states, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and New York. And there was a tenth of a percent Jews in America, only seven synagogues in a country of 3 million people. But then after the Irish potato famine, the Catholic percentage went from 2% up to eventually 25%. You look at, so in 30 years ago, the CIA website said America was 98% Christian. And then 20 years ago, it went down to 85%, and then 80%, and then 70%, and then, you know, so the most recent time I've checked, it was hanging barely at 70% of Americans identifying themselves as Christian.
Hmm.
And, of course, they reflect the Pew Forum, P-E-W. Pew Forum does surveys on the religion and the adherence in America. But here, in just
and probably just
and
just to mention, Bill, that the term Christian is in its various broadest form at the same time.
Right. And so the situation was the public school system was Protestant. The parochial school system was Catholic, and you had 98% of the country was Christian. They thought, well, let's just get teaching of religion out of the public schools because we don't want it taught with a Protestant flavor or a Catholic flavor. We look at this today and think, man, how narrow-minded they were back then. Little things, like Catholics numbered the Ten Commandments differently. They combined the first two and split the tenth one. But you read through it, it's the same content. You had the Protestants adding at the end of the Our Father. Is the kingdom, power,
Bill,
and glory forever and ever.
Say, Bill, just to help us here, because we're going to get so into some of these details, we're going to have to launch forward here. And I'd like us to launch forward to 1935, the ACLU being started. Tell us about the starting the ACLU and its founder, Roger Baldwin.
Roger Baldwin was a World War I draft dodger. He went to Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, but then he decided to become an attorney and defend communists. That's right. So here we had the communist Bolshevik Revolution taking place in Russia, turning it from Russia into the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And these communist infiltrators would come into countries and agitate. They would find groups of people that had grievances, and they would stir them up to riot. And when the rioting got bad enough and people felt insecure, they would beg the government to step in and restore order. And the government would come in and collect everybody's guns and then take away their freedom of speech so they couldn't speak out and stir people up against the government, and they would, you know, ban meetings and so forth. And so the communists were infiltrating into America, and so the government actually passed laws to stop them. And Roger Baldwin would defend the communists. Hmm. And so he wrote in 1935, he says, "I am for socialism, disarmament, and ultimately the abolishing of the state itself. Communism is the goal." Now, what does he mean, socialism and communism? He said communism is the goal. So what is socialism? Socialism is a transition phase between capitalism and communism. Communism is always the goal. It's always hanging out there. It's this utopian promise that once we get rid of all businesses and all classes, then it's going to be this wonderful utopian paradise. It never happens, but that's the goal. So socialism is the means to get there. It's a gradual revolutionary process where you have the government begin to take away freedoms one at a time, but they need to have crises in order to do it. So they send. So Karl Marx talked about sending in agitators, agent provocateurs, provoking agents, and their goal is to create social unrest, disturbances, hateful riots and mobs. Why? So that the people feel insecure, and then they will surrender their freedoms to some government leader. Baldwin said in another place, "I joined. I don't regret in being part of the communist tactic, which increases the effectiveness of a good cause. I knew what I was doing. I was not an innocent liberal. I wanted what the communists wanted." Mm-hmm. And so I began talking about kings, and then I talked about how America's founders flipped it and made the people the king. Mm-hmm. America's founders looked back to ancient Israel as the model. It's called covenant, where it's people in agreement with each other, rights from God, accountable to God. In the next century, covenant turned into social contract, people in agreement with each other, with or without God. Next century turned into the French Revolution, Marxism, and communism, where it's people in agreement with each other intentionally without God, which makes the state God. And what the state giveth, the state can taketh awayeth, and you don't have any other rights other than what the state gives you. And so socialism is basically reverting back to the totalitarian government ruled by some political elites called the deep state or the Communist Party, and there's always one mobster that finds his way to the top, and he acts as the tyrant or the new king. So socialism is basically dictatorship.
Bill Federer with us here today, and we're talking about our topic today, communist goals coming to pass, and certainly we see the systematic removal of God from the public square and how that happened in the educational system. We saw the start of the ACLU and its founder and the goals that were there to promote socialism with the eventual goal of communism. We're going to take a quick break here in Crosstalk, and we're going to propel forward to the 1960s, in which we have the cases going before the U.S. Supreme Court as it relates to Bible reading as well as prayer before the schools. That was mandatory prayer that once happened, mandatory Bible reading, how that was removed and its impact that it's had upon a nation. But guess what? All part of the communistic goals. We'll be back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, did Noah's Ark have to contain two of every species we find on planet Earth today?
Not at all, Chris. In fact, this is a straw man argument used by those who really don't believe in Noah's Ark at all. The Bible says that God created each basic type of animal after its kind, and that Noah was to bring two of each kind of animal on board the ark. Kind would be represented by the basic categories of animals today, such as the dog kind. Within the dog kind, there are several species. That's the wolves and the foxes and the coyotes and the dingoes. They are called species, but they're all interfertile. They're all part of the dog kind. There was plenty of room on board the ark for two of each of these various kinds of land-dwelling, air-breathing animals. The Bible story holds water, as it were. We read about it when we go back to Genesis.
For more on creation, visit our website at www.icr.org.
Bill Federer is our guest here today on Crosstalk. His website, AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com, and laid a foundation here in this first segment today about communist goals coming to pass. And certainly the ACLU has been a part of that. And folks, it's no accident that they are at the very hub of so many lawsuits that are going on in our court system today to remove God from any kind of recognition, you know, in whether it be on our money supply or whether it be in monuments or Ten Commandments being posted, just anything having to do with God, we find it under attack. And Bill, let's take us to the early 60s, in which we have seen a couple of incidents come before the U.S. Supreme Court. Incidents with great significance, and that is that of school prayer and also that of Bible reading.
Right. So socialist and communist countries have to get rid of God, because as long as there's a God, you have rights from this God. And the state doesn't want to have rights from anybody other than it. And so that's why you see even right now in China, they're wanting to take God out of everything in this crackdown, because they don't want a person saying, I've got rights the government can't take away. Anyway, so you had 80 million killed in China when the communists took over. You had Pol Pot killed a third of Cambodia. You had Stalin killing tens of millions. And so this began to infiltrate into America. And so you had groups that were like warning the country as to this infiltration of the socialist and communist tactic. And but nevertheless, it began to spread in America, and one of those was the taking the prayer out of schools. And so you had a 1962 Engels versus Vital Supreme Court decision. Hugo Black, a former KKK member that Franklin Roosevelt put on the Supreme Court, he issued the decision where there used to be mandatory prayer in the schools. Again, why? It's not this idea that, oh, all religions are the same. It's this idea that, no, some religions give a value to human life higher than other religions. And the Judeo-Christian biblical idea gives the highest value, that you are of worth, whether or not you can contribute to the state, simply because you're made in the image of God. And this God is a hates respect of persons and judgment. This God says everybody's equal. So if you're it's not where you're a believing Muslim, you're more equal, and if you're a kafir infidel, you're less equal, or India, where it's a caste system. If you're a Brahmin in the highest caste, you're near divinity, and if you're a untouchable in the lowest caste, you got to clean the sewers, and you're born into these castes, and so you can never change it. No, in America, our founder said, you're equal simply because you're made in the image of the Creator, and we're all in this image. So they understood that the Judeo-Christian Bible-based belief system was superior to all these other ones, and so they had mandatory prayer in the schools, and it was Christian prayer. Even if it didn't say Christianity, what do I mean? Calling God Father, that's a Bible term. In Islam, no one says, Allah is my Father. Mm-hmm. In Hinduism, there's 300 million different gods, you know, and then in atheism, there is no God. So simply calling God, he's a monotheistic God, and he's your Father. That's Christian. And this concept that you can do anything with your life, you can start nowhere and you can become something, that's a Christian concept. Other cultures, by men in Cairo, Egypt, if you're a Christian, you can never graduate and hold a job higher than a Muslim.
Okay, so let's come back here to school prayer before the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay, Hugo Black, the case was Engels versus Vital. Madeline Murray O'Hare, she's an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
And she decides to immigrate to the Soviet Union. Bill Murray, her son, was with her. She says that they went to the embassy of the Soviet Union in France. They said she was crazy. They wouldn't let her in. So she comes back by boat to Maryland, gets off, puts her son, William J. Murray, into the public school system, walks down the hall, sees the kids praying and reading the Bible. And she decides to sue. And lo and behold, it hits a nerve, and every atheist in the country sends her money, and all these leftist groups send her money, and she's just rolling in the dough. And now her son's 14 years old, and she gives these cases. Another was Abington Township versus Shemp, and that stopped the reading of the Bible in the schools. Now, as far as Madeleine Murray, she even threatened to sue NASA because the Apollo 8 astronauts read from the book of Genesis in 1968 when they were circling the moon.
And now, she's a proponent of socialism and a proponent of communism.
Right. Bill Murray said that he grew up, they were having communist, not Bible studies in their house, but communist, Marxist, Leninist studies in their house.
Mm.
And last chapter on her life, she hired felons as her bodyguards to make her look really tough. That this guy, had been in jail for this, and this guy in jail for that. Well, these felons decided that, obviously she was the head of this atheist organization. There's no God. They decided they're going to rob her. And so they take her and the couple people she was with around to all the ATMs and drain her, all of her bank accounts, and then take her out to West Texas, and they murdered her and cut up her body and buried her.
Wow.
And the three guys that did it were put in jail, but none of them would ever tell what happened. Finally, two of them died, and the third one, William J. Murray, left his mom. He became a Christian, started the Religious Freedom Foundation, and he's now lobbying in Washington, D.C. For the Christians that are persecuted in third world countries.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great guy. He's a good friend of mine. He wrote a book called My Life Without God,
yes.
And he talks about how he got saved. But he finally got the FBI to look into it, and they found her body. But anyway, this was this case, and she was the one that got prayer out of schools and Bible reading out of schools in the early 1960s.
And folks, a love for socialism, a love for communism. Bill, let's go to 1963. A Democratic congressman, Albert Hurlong Jr., who actually warned of the socialist to communist agenda that infiltrating the schools. Tell us about his warning.
So World War II, we win a two-front world war in Europe and in the Pacific, and then the next big threat is the communists. And they realize they cannot defeat America on the battlefield, so they decided to weaken us from the inside. It's called the Fifth Column. It goes back to Alexander the Great's dad, who used money to bribe citizens of Athens to betray their own city. And so this idea is you got two, in a typical old-fashioned battle, you'd have two columns and then two flanks. But then the fifth column was the infiltration of the enemy. And so FDR used the term a lot during World War II, saying that the Nazis were trying to find sympathizers and they had a fifth column going on. Well, anyway, after World War II, the communists realized that they can't defeat us on the battlefield. They got to destroy our institutions. And so they actually came up with a list. And in 1963, Congressman Albert Hurlong Jr. from Florida reads into the congressional record this list. Number one, eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in the schools on the grounds that it violates the separation of church and state.
Mm.
That's exactly what they were doing.
Yes,
he read this in 1963. Number two, control the schools. Use them as transition belts for socialism and communist propaganda.
Hmm.
I mean, you look at what they're teaching in schools. And three, soften the curriculum. Get control of the teachers' associations. Put party line in the textbooks. Control student newspapers. This is when the courses in Western civilization got turned into social social studies.
Mm-hmm.
So it used to be Western Civ, this idea of the individual and so forth. Now it's turned into social studies. And now they don't even teach that. And then they began to change. They used to teach reading using books, like Webster's Primer and things that had mentions of God.
Mm-hmm.
They changed it to See Dick Run, See Dick and Jane Run. And it was this taking out of, it was learning how to read, but taking out any moral lessons that these kids were learning. Hurlong continues in his list, 1963, infiltrate the churches, replace revealed religion with social religion, social justice, liberation theology.
Oh, yes.
And so we've seen it where instead of preaching the gospel, we're sinners, we need to be saved. Jesus Christ is the Lamb of God, died on the cross to pay for our sins, and through him we have a relationship with God the Father. Take that out and turn it into, just do the social stuff of taking care of the poor and don't care about their eternal salvation. And then the liberation theology took it to the next step, used in Latin America, where you You start killing people to push your agenda. You use violence, which is completely against Christian teachings. Jesus never killed anybody. And this, her long list continues. Discredit the Bible. Emphasize the need for intellectual maturity, which does not need a religious crutch.
Wow.
Discredit American culture. Discredit the family as an institution. Encourage promiscuity and divorce. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy.
Wow.
Let me read that again. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy.
He read this in the Congressional Record in 1963?
1963. And a matter of fact, the communists formed the first homosexual society in America. It's called the Mattachine Society. And to lobby to repeal sodomy laws. This all goes back to this infiltration, and they've been doing it very effectively. And so we see, again, if you're going to fight an enemy on the battlefield, you can get out there with guns. There was a little of that during the French and Indian War. There was a British William Pitt and his Amherst, Massachusetts, and their little fort was surrounded by Indians who were going to kill them. And somebody had smallpox, and they like threw some blankets out that had smallpox on it, and the Indians caught smallpox and died. Now, this has been used in other different scenarios, but it's this idea: if you can't militarily defeat somebody, you want to weaken them. The British did this again with Benedict Arnold, and during the Revolutionary War, we were marching toward Canada, and we would have captured it, but our army got sick with smallpox. There was another case in Milford, Connecticut, where the British had captured some Americans, and they were weak and ill with smallpox. They let them go. And at first, the Americans were like, oh, great, they're letting all these captives go. And then they realized, oh, smallpox.
My.
But this is the idea. If you can't defeat America on the battlefield, you want to weaken it from the inside. And what do? You find the institutions, marriage, the family, the church, the Bible. You want to tear all these down. And in its place, you put, there's moral relativism, transgender. There's no right. There's no wrong. You don't even know if you're a boy or a girl. How can you say that something's absolutely right and something's absolute? What's wrong with killing classmates? There's no right and there's no wrong anymore. And what happens is, once you tear down this moral fiber, it turns into social chaos. Out of the social chaos, you have a call to take away guns, call to take away freedom of speech so you don't say anything that offends somebody so they riot, a call to take away all your rights and freedoms. So it's like dominoes. You first remove the morals, then there's social chaos, and then a dictator rises to power.
Wow.
It happened in France during the French Revolution, right? They had King Louis XVI. They get rid of the king. They set up their version of democracy, but there's no God. It turns into all this lawlessness in France, where they chop off 30,000 heads in Paris. Out of that lawlessness, what happens? You get a dictator named Napoleon. And so so Plato even said it, 380 B.C.
We're going to, let's just pause here. Bill Federer with us. Quick break here, folks. Yeah, the destruction of, remove God, remove our accountability before Him, remove prayer, change the textbooks, control the schools, discredit the Bible, discredit our culture, discredit the family, and then also that of present homosexuality as normal, natural, and healthy. Folks, all part of the communist agenda. How do your children factor into this? When we come back, this is Crosstalk.
Evolution as an idea is considered a rock-solid truth among secular scientists. But when you begin looking at the evidence and asking simple questions, you find their conclusions to be just fragile assumptions, unproven myth, and outright misconceptions. Like a glass house on shifting sands. In the book Glass House, general editors Ken Ham and Bodie Hodge, along with a team of credentialed scientists, researchers, and biblical apologists, take on the pillars of evolution. The truths they reveal decimate Darwin's beliefs using a biblical and logical approach to evidence. Learn what science is and how science is actually devastating to evolution. You'll also learn how evolution developed from unproven science to a popular and cultural worldview. Copies of Glass House are available for a donation of $16 or more to VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Folks, we're talking about the communist goals coming to pass. And I don't know about you, but to me, it's a real eye-opener when you look at these goals that were read into the congressional record back in 1935, warning of the very things that we are seeing take place today in our society. Bill Federer is with us. AmericanMinute.com is his website. He's got tons of resources on so many different topics pertaining to our nation's history and a number of books, DVDs. You can check it out at AmericanMinute.com. Bill, you've again set the foundation for us as we've looked in history past as what has brought us to this point here. We looked at leading up to these Supreme Court decisions, removing the prayer, the Bibles from the school, Madeleine Murray O'Hara herself being a proponent of socialism and communism. We looked at the Democratic Congressman Albert Herlong, who warned of the socialist to communist agenda infiltrating schools, and now we see so many members of his own party that are advancing it to great extent here across this land. And then you also told us even the first homosexual rights organizations actually started by members of the Communist Party. I mean, all of this is alarming. And Bill, while this is going on, there's really a transformation of what's being taught children. And I think I heard the line click, which means we're going to reconnect with Bill here once again. But folks, it's alarming when you see the very aspect of the transformation that has taken place in this nation, and back in 1935, even warning this nation and reading into the congressional record these things that were coming to pass. Truly, truly alarming, ladies and gentlemen, and those are the issues that are taking place and have been warned about, and now we are seeing them advance in our culture today. We've reconnected with Bill right now, and Bill, as we mentioned this, while this is happening, we're going to talk about the importance of children being in the crosshairs. But Bill, while this is going on and this total takeover, there is just a re-education going on. There's a transformation what is being taught children in the schools, in the curricula. We don't want, Western civilization. We don't want civics. We're going to teach social studies. We find so many subjects that are being hijacked. And even the way we read, the methods we read, how we read, what we read, how we do math, science, all of these aspects, there's just a total transformation in education going on.
Right. There's even quotes from some of the people that are in the National Standards Testing Board saying that their goal is no longer teaching dates and numbers and facts and figures, but to prepare the students to be citizens for the new world in 50 years from now. Hmm. Like, who told you that you want to? So, in other words, behavior modification.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed it from teaching academics to behavior modification. So, instead of learning the academic achievement, they learn how all kinds of sexual stuff. But if you think of it as we're spirit, mind, and body. So your mind is like a super fancy computer. It's more than that, but it's at least that. And your body's like the computer case, which makes it silly for people to argue over what color the computer case is. Reds are better than greens. Like, it doesn't matter what color your computer is or your phone is. It's what apps, what software do you have running on the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what color somebody's skin is. It's what behavioral software are they using? Is it God's word? Love your enemy, do good to those that hate you, turn the other cheek? Or is it this stirring up violence and hatred and grievances and mobs and rioting? And so we see the battle is over who gets to program the software in the next generation's brains.
Hmm.
And the other side wants to put on their malware and viruses and corrupted files. And in the 1960s, the Christians surrendered it. And so we've been fighting battles, but at the same time, we've been allowing the children to go through, and their statistics are high. You take a kid raised in church, you put them in a public school, a public college, before long they lose their faith. Why? Well, you're putting them into a place where they've specialized in, instead of marketing cereal to these kids, they're marketing ideologies, and they have it down to a real art. It's the art's pretty easy. Saul Alinsky said ridicule is the most powerful weapon. So picture, it's first day of school, you got a kid in the classroom, and the teacher says, "Who believes that it's normal to have a mommy and a daddy?" And little Johnny raises his hand. The teacher says, "You're terrible. You're hateful. You're homophobic. You're a bigot. You're the worst kid in the whole wide world." And then she stops and says, does anybody else believe what little Johnny does? Hmm. All the other kids are going to keep their hands down, right? And so Saul Alinsky said, this is what you do. You take a target, you isolate it, you freeze it, and you destroy it. Whether it's politically trying to do that to Sarah Palin or a kid in the classroom, this is what the media does. And then everybody backs away from the position they hold. And so you take a child and put him in this atmosphere where they've learned this. Anyway, it's a serious situation where we've surrendered the programming of the next generation. I was out in California, and there's a doctor. He was in tears. He said, they're pushing this LGBT agenda to preschoolers.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, they ought to at least wait till the kids get past puberty before they talk them into what sex they are. And everybody goes through changes in puberty, and it's criminal for them to want to do operations on kids before puberty.
Yeah. And Bill, the proponents of socialism and communism, they knew this, and they know, they knew these very various principles. Give us some quotes from some of those that understood this very concept.
Well, the first one, Khrushchev, he was talking with one of Eisenhower's Secretary of Agriculture in 1959, and Khrushchev says, your children will live under communism. You Americans are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright, but we'll keep feeding you small doses of socialism until you finally wake up and find you've already had communism.
Hmm.
We won't have to fight you. We'll so weaken your economy until you fall like overripe fruit into our hands.
Wow, wow.
And that was the Sun Tzu, the art of war idea, that the best general is one that doesn't have to fight, that he knows how to destroy the morals of his opponents so they surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Plato. Now, Plato, Athens, 380 BC, he goes through the progression of the people in Athens being in charge of themselves, but he says it only works if the people have virtue. Eventually Athens fell because Alexander the Great's dad bribed some people without virtue with money, and they betrayed their own city. But Plato says that since democracy is based on people having virtue, and people really don't have virtue, he said if you give someone the choice of giving up their virtue or giving up their life, they will always give up their life, give up their virtue to save their life.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is different in the Christian, in the Jewish Judeo-Christian model, is because we believe in an afterlife with a God that rewards you for standing up for righteousness and so forth. But Athens didn't have that. They just had a bunch of pagan gods, and they really didn't have that, mm-hmm. that concept of an afterlife. And so it was being virtuous for virtuous' sake. And Plato says, this is not going to last. And so what's going to happen is you're going to have chaos, and then you're going to have a tyrant take over. And he says, what's this tyrant going to do? He will take possession of the children who will be unaffected by the habits of their parents. Plato goes on, these they will train in their own habits and laws. So Plato says this tyrant is going to take the children away from the families before they've been, quote-unquote, affected by the habits of their parents.
Wow.
And he'll bring them into the city and indoctrinate them with noble lies. And actually calls them lies, but he says the lies help them stay in power. And then Hitler said something similar.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler, 1933, says, when an opponent declares, I will not come to your side, I calmly say, your child belongs to us already. What are you? You will pass on. Your descendants, however, will now stand in the new camp. In a short time, they will know nothing else but this new community. Now, during this time, you had an author named George Orwell, and he wrote the book 1984, and he said how socialist dictators will be constantly rewriting history, that they'll go back, and whoever was the enemy, they'll make into the good guy, and whoever was the good guy, they'll make into the enemy, and they call it the Ministry of Truth, but all they do is teach lies. And so George Orwell, in describing socialism, he talked about it in his book Animal Farm, and it's a great book. It puts it all into these animals are on a farm, and the terrible guy is the farmer. And so all the animals team up and kill the farmer. And so all the animals are now in charge of the farm, but they don't know what to do. And so the pigs are the biggest bullies, and they start telling everybody else what to do. And so the pigs get all the apples that fall from the trees and they drink all the milk. And when the other ones start complaining, the pigs say, well, we're the ones that keep everything running. And so we get to eat all the special stuff because it would turn into chaos if we weren't here. And so basically, instead of having the terrible farmer, now you got these terrible pigs. And that's what socialism is. It's called Animal Farm. So George Orwell was trying to warn the country of what was going to be happening. And
here's another quote from Hitler. Go ahead and give us that one from May 1st, 1937.
Hitler said, "We have set before ourselves the task of inoculating our youth at a very early age. The new Reich," which is the German word for rule, the new Reich will give its youth to no one, but will take youth, take itself youth and give to youth its own education and its own upbringing.
Wow. Vladimir Lenin also had something interesting to say.
Right. Lenin said, "Give me 4 years to teach the children, and the seeds I have sown will never be uprooted."
Yeah. Karl Marx.
Karl Marx says, "The education of all children, from the moment that they can get along without a mother's care, shall be in state's institutions at state expense."
Wow. And that's virtually what we're seeing take place today. And we're, from cradle to the grave, basically, we want the state in charge. That's what, whether it be the Medicare for all or preschool for all and college for all. I mean, it is a total takeover. And this is really a fulfillment of Karl Marx's dream.
Well, it is. And if you think of it as, I mentioned dominoes before, but think of it, our country is controlled by laws. Laws are controlled by politicians. Politicians are controlled by voters. Voters are controlled by public information, public media. And the media and education is controlled by the educational system. So you teach, and in the long run, it's the education of the children. Short run, it's the media. Media influences public opinion. Public opinion influences who gets elected. Who gets elected makes the laws, and the laws control the country. If I can figure it out, they have. Hmm. And so that's why they've targeted on getting control of the media and Hollywood and the music and pushing their agenda by making it in and cool and acceptable to be having a certain set of beliefs and being shunned and ridiculed if you hold other set of beliefs. So they get control of the media, and they get control of education. And they use that same intimidation tactics in the classroom, where if somebody has backbone and they stand up for traditional morals, they will ridicule that poor child. And then everybody else backs away from them.
Bill Federer with us.
Nobody wants to be ridiculed.
Bill Federer with us here today on Crosstalk. Our number, 800-733-9829. 800-733-9829 is our number here. We'll take your calls in our last segment today. And another quote here from Bill's writing. Joseph Stalin stated, "Education is a weapon whose effect depends on who holds it in his hands and at whom it is aimed." Folks, we're talking about the communist goals. They're coming to pass. They're being unfolded right before our very eyes. And we continue to sleep and slumber like a frog in the kettle, and the water is heating up. We'll be back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Last week, we had the tragic shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio. And liberals are quick to blame conservatives and Christians and claim it is due to racism. Reality is, the progressive socialist liberals should be celebrating what has just occurred, because they have been agitating for it and creating it for generations. They have been deliberately trying to destroy the institutions of America that have led to this tragedy, and more to follow. So why are they crying? Why are they upset? You and I both know most of these progressives are not upset at all. This is what they have wanted. Chaos. They've wanted to destroy the family, law, order, sanctity, security. Why? So they could exploit the crisis. As Saul Alinsky said, change comes from the conflict. Agitate to the point of conflict. The progressives have gotten what they wanted. They've removed God from America's moorings, and this is the fruit.
Folks, what we're seeing is communist goals coming to pass. Bill Fritterer is our guest today. His website is AmericanMinute.com. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Denise calling in. Hi, Denise. Thanks for calling Crosstalk from Marinette. You're on the air.
Hi, Jim. This is Denise from Marinette. And I have to tell you, I'm a do remember Hello. Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Mm-hmm.
I remember growing up in the school systems where prayer was prohibited. And through the years, I've had experience working for a university, state university in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you, and Bill, you're right on target. Education is marketing socialism. That ideology permeates every subject, every class, every classroom.
Wow.
Now, here in Marinette, there's a group of gray-haired ladies. We are some 70, her old age, and we pray that, as Psalm 71 says, so even to our old age and gray hairs, O God, do not forsake us, for we proclaim your might to another generation.
Yeah.
And right now we're praying for action, that in our old age we're not going to crochet and sit in our rockers. We want to go and educate our children.
Wow.
So we're looking into CEF and other groups,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just throwing this out there for Christian ladies to really be in prayer. How can we impact the children that are not in our churches?
Yeah. Amen.
That their parents aren't aware.
Thank you, Denise.
And perhaps it's through loving education through some of these programs. So that's my 5 cents worth from Marinette. And
I'd love to keep in contact with you.
Denise, Bill wants to tell you something here.
Yes, Denise, I'd love to keep in contact with you. Matter of fact, just today I was telling someone that about CEF and the Good News Clubs. And Matt Staber, who Jim and I both know,
mm-hmm.
He fought cases to the Supreme Court so that these Good News Clubs can be in the public schools. They just need somebody that's willing to be the teacher. But they can present this Bible course there. And it's a great way to at least take advantage of this opportunity. But I'd love to keep in contact with you, Denise, through my website, AmericanMinute.com. Or you can email me at wjfederer@gmail.com.
Thank you, Denise.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the call. Chris is next in Hales Corners. You're on the air, Chris.
Hi. I used to be a teacher, and the majority of my colleagues were very much Marxist because they were trained at the teacher colleges. But you know who populates the teacher colleges? Are people that Israel sends over. You look at the Star of Duplicity, that's their plan of action, is that's how they create the United States as a golem to do what they want. It's all part of their theology, Star of Duplicity.
Whose theology, Chris?
Israel.
Israel's philosophy? Well, I think we have surrendered our own philosophy to the likes of Marx and Stalin and so forth, and have given way here even through our own Supreme Court decisions in that regard. Any comment there, Bill?
Yeah, I'm always careful to not want to malign individual groups, especially Israel. I'm a supporter of Israel. But there are socialist threads that are in the kibbutz system that I've talked to people that have been in it and they've gotten out of it. And you have to understand, socialism does not work and it's not biblical.
Yeah.
The only way that you can have a group work together is if they believe that there is a God, and that this God is the dispenser of all the rights, and that you are ultimately accountable to this God.
Mm-hmm.
But true socialism doesn't want that God. They want the state to be the giver of rights, and that you're accountable to the state. And so this infiltration, I think, can be blamed on those that you know ultimately want to take away our freedoms and set up a globalist government. I wouldn't blame it on Israel.
Thank you, Chris. Let's go to Audrey next. Audrey, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I first heard about this book back on Milwaukee Talk Radio, I believe in the 90s. The book that it comes from, the author was with the FBI from 1935.
Just go right to your point, Audrey. We're almost out of time.
Okay. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. My point is, thank you for exposing the golds, okay? The
mm-hmm.
golds, of the Naked Communist, of the book, okay? Published in 1958, by right. the way.
Thank you, Audrey.
Is that John Stormer, I think, or...
No.
Yeah, The Naked Communists, and yeah, that was a very popular book, and it's very eye-opening. And yes, I do encourage people to read that.
Thank you, Audrey. Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I think a lot of the, I think it's wrong to try to blame the liberals on trying to change America and put communism instead of capitalism that we have today. I think it always can be a capitalist system. I think what the liberals want is they want a nation that's smarter. And by having education available to all, affordable education, you get a smarter country. And a smarter country, when America can take care of its people.
Tom, we're going to have Bill respond because we're down to 60 seconds here. But what we have, instead of what you're talking about, Tom, we have a dumbing down of the American people, a dumbing down of our system of government, a dumbing down of how this country needs to work, a dumbing down of our responsibility before God. Bill, we've got a minute left. What would you like to share?
Yeah, well, you can't sell an ideology by saying negative things about it. And so you take good goals, but your way of achieving those is bad. It's a bait and switch. And so, yes, they say they want to improve everything, but the track record is it's been going in the opposite direction. They've been introducing concepts. Now, I will make a distinction. Global capitalism is bad. When we're talking these big global tech companies and these big George Soroses and these big people, but local small capitalism is good. And each of us involve ourselves in it every day. You buy what you want, and the supplier supplies what you want at the cheapest price. That's good. You don't want the government saying everybody's got to buy this certain item at this certain price. So capitalism on the small, local, national level is good. On the international level, it's bad. And, you know...
Thank you, Tom, for the call. We are out of time. Bill Fitter, our guest today, AmericanMinute.com is a website. Bill, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for writing on this issue and alerting people as to what the communist goals are and certainly warning us as to their implementation here even today.
Thank you, Jim. It's always an honor.
Bill Fitter, our guest here today on the program, AmericanMinute.com is the website. Thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.